is Fantasy Football Today from CBS Sports.
Here we go.
Email us at fantasyfootball@cbsi.com.
Here we go.
It's time to dominate your fantasy league.
Let's go.
Now, here's some combination of Adam, Dave, Jamie, and Heath.
Well, I hope you're ready for a very fun Wednesday show. Welcome, everybody. This is Fantasy Football Today. I'm ready for Wednesday. Heath, I know you're ready for a fun Trade Talk Wednesday show. Hi, Heath.
I buy low, sell high. No thanks, guy.
That's right. Buy low or heck no. And sell high or no thanks, guy. I don't think we're playing that today. And Ben Gretsch is here. What's going on, Ben? Welcome back. We haven't spoken to you since Saturday. How was your week one?
It was good. Yeah, it went well. A lot of interesting stuff, definitely. I mean, there always is, but a lot of fun storylines in week one this year.
Yeah, and we will get to those, Ben. We have a little segment carved out just for Ben Gretsch's fun stats and things to know. Obviously, buy low, sell high. We're going to do that every single Wednesday. We're going to preview the Thursday night game. Heath has Greg Olsen ranked ahead of O.J. Howard. Repeat. Heath has Greg Olsen ranked ahead of O.J. Howard. Heath, you have Greg Olsen ranked ahead of O.J. Howard. Just letting you know that.
Well, here's what I'll say. The numbers have Greg Olsen ranked ahead of O.J. Howard. There's no bias in my rankings. And that's more true early in the week than it will be Wednesday or Thursday when I kind of go through and take more of a closer look at my opinion on things. I will say O.J. Howard was a player I was very, very disappointed in the more I looked into it. Week one, I did not like the fact that Mike Evans was sick and couldn't play his full role, and we still didn't really see a huge bump in target share for O.J. Howard. I did not like the fact that the two touchdowns that went to tight ends that were overturned went to Cameron Brate and not O.J. Howard. I did not like the fact that O.J. Howard wasn't targeted downfield as much as he was in Dirk Cutter's offense. I am a little bit concerned about O.J. Howard.
Okay. I sent out a couple of tweets yesterday. One of them got about 86 responses, something like that. That was my tweet about, if you were writing a 2019 bust column today, who would you lead with? And the other one got like 130 comments, and that was my comment about how...
These just hashtag humble brags about how big your Twitter following is?
No.
Or what's going on here?
124 comments on my tweet about how I finally watched the end of the Avengers movie. And it sucks. Like, the last hour is just garbage. Maybe more like a half hour. You know, it was on FX. But, yeah, people didn't like that tweet. I think, Heath, you added it to the thread, right?
Yes, we added it to the thread of terrible Adam Azer takes. I wish you had tweeted. Like, I guess I can just say what you said on the show last night and add it to the thread as well, because it was one of your, like, what? You give a lot of good advice. I give you a hard time for like the bad things that you say. You do give a lot of good advice through the season. You help people out a lot. But you said one of the most asinine things you have ever said on a podcast in your life last night.
What did I say? So I did said this on HQ last night?
Yes, that you were willing to drop D.D. Westbrook to pick up a backup quarterback in a one quarterback league.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, I do.
Ben is laughing at you.
No, when you phrase it like that, but he's a backup quarterback.
That's exactly what you said.
But we're talking about Dak Prescott, who has a chance to be really good this year. I'm not sure how much I buy it because, you know, the competition was...
You don't even like Dak Prescott.
Yeah, I don't, but maybe I'm opening my eyes to... Maybe I was wrong about Dak Prescott. So, you know, you got Cam Newton. The guy had Cam Newton. He wanted to know if he should drop D.D. Westbrook to pick up Dak Prescott. I said, yeah, I'm fine with that because I don't like D.D. Westbrook with Gardner Minshew. I just don't. So I think he's droppable, and I think it's okay to roster two quarterbacks. Play the matchups. You don't want to be stuck with Cam Newton in a week where you don't like him. And like Cam Newton didn't run in week one, and that's a continuation of what we saw late last season. And if he doesn't run, he's not going to be that good. So that the same way you're concerned about O.J. Howard, like I'm not super concerned about Cam Newton. I'm not benching Cam Newton, but I noticed that he didn't run, and I'm okay going out and getting a guy like Dak Prescott. It's fine with me.
But if your league is that shallow where you have to cut D.D. Westbrook, number one, it's probably not a smart move to roster two quarterbacks in a league that shallow. But number two, if you're believing in that type of a league that everything you just said about Cam Newton, that Cam Newton is not that good of a fantasy quarterback, then you just cut Cam Newton.
No.
And you pick up Dak Prescott.
No, I'm not cutting Cam Newton to pick up Dak.
You drafted D.D. Westbrook ahead of where you drafted Cam Newton.
I drafted
D.D.
Westbrook when Nick Foles was the quarterback, and it's not like Nick Foles is so great, but I do believe he'll be a lot better than Gardner Minshew. I'm very concerned about D.D. Westbrook.
I don't know. Like, what is your thing against Gardner Minshew?
What do you mean, what is my thing?
We know nothing about Gardner
Minshew.
Wasn't
he like a
other than the fact that he carved up the Chiefs defense.
What round was he drafted?
We'll find out more.
What round was he
drafted? I'm not saying Gardner Minshew's good, but we know nothing about him so far. Ben paid like $150 for him in our two quarterback league.
Ben, I have a section here.
I had 8 luck in that league, and I'm definitely going to need a third quarterback. But look, he played in the air raid offense with Mike Leach at Washington State and was good. He's a guy. He's a charismatic dude. I think he's kind of an interesting guy, and I think he can be decent as well. I mean, I certainly we don't talk about this a lot, but I certainly think that when there's guys that like, I'm not gonna go into the whole grit thing, but I mean, the guy wants to win. Like, I like guys like Ryan Fitzpatrick. That guy will air it out, and he might throw a lot of interceptions, but it also helps his stats, right? And I think we'll see that from Gardner Minshew too. He'll be willing to take shots. He'll be willing to take hits. That helps a stat floor just because he's willing to be a little bit of a gunslinger, I would say.
He is a 6th round pick for the Jacksonville Jaguars. It is hard for rookie quarterbacks to make a fantasy impact. He is a 6th round pick.
He's not going to make a fantasy impact. We're not starting him.
He's probably going to be a terrible quarterback. And it's going to hurt D.D. Westbrook, and I'm sorry. I think you guys are going to be dropping D.D. Westbrook in 2 or 3 weeks, and I'm just ahead of the curve, baby.
If I do, it won't be for a backup quarterback.
It's not a backup quarterback. It's a starting quarterback. Like Dak Prescott,
so
I wouldn't drop.
So you're benching Cam.
I wouldn't mind having, believe
in Dak Prescott.
I wouldn't mind having two really good quarterbacks on my team. Why do we just act? You know what? Keep Dak Prescott away from another team. Why do we just act like it's so easy to have one quarterback? I'm going to start Cam Newton every single week. I'm going to start Jared Goff every single week. No, I'd like to be able to play the matchups. I'm fine with that. Right. Points are points. Like, I'll take.
Matt Bryant's available in a lot of leagues, too. Get your backup kicker.
Oh, you're the worst. All right, so let's get to the show here. By the way, actually, let's talk about this. Tyreek Hill out 4 to 6 weeks. Ben, your reaction here, fantasy impact of Tyreek Hill's injury.
Yeah, Mecole Hardman has to be a must-add. We already talked about Sammy Watkins has top 10 wide receiver potential, but Hardman ran routes on 79% of Patrick Mahomes' dropbacks in week one. He didn't put up a lot of stats, but he very clearly went right into the Tyreek Hill role. They weren't game planning for him to be on the field that much. I think they will game plan some easier things for him to do going forward. This offense looked phenomenal in Jacksonville, even after Hill went down. You want a guy who's going to be running a ton of routes and be their speed threat. Remember that when the Tyreek Hill news this offseason initially broke was right during the draft, the Chiefs made sure to get Mecole Hardman. He's their replacement if Tyreek Hill were to have not been able to play this year. He's going to be the replacement now that he's injured. We saw that in the snap shares and routes run in week one. So he's an add in almost every league. I mean, you want receivers in this good of an offense.
It's interesting. He's only 32% owned. And guess who else had no catches in his NFL debut? How about Calvin Ridley? 0 catches on 3 targets in week one in 2018. And then 64 yards and a touchdown, 146 yards and 3 touchdowns, 54 yards and 2 touchdowns in his next 3 games. So Hardman, 32% owned, somebody you want to get. I mean, you weren't on the waiver wire show. Neither of you were on the waiver wire show. But if we were doing it again, you know, everybody's adding Marquise Brown. Everybody's adding DK Metcalf, John Brown, Jamison Crowder. Those were the top four, not necessarily in that order. Heath, where would Hardman be in that group?
Not for me in that group. Like, I agree with Ben that he's somebody you want to add, and he's like, but he would be behind those four for me for sure. I'd probably put him behind Terry McLaurin as well. I was impressed with his involvement in the offense, but I would rather add him. I'd rather add Mecole Hardman than John Ross.
Okay.
So, I would add Hardman over all of those players.
Whoa. Really?
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah,
okay.
Absolutely. I mean,
Wait, this is the litmus test for the entire show today. Are you dropping D.D. Westbrook for Mecole Hardman?
No. Oh, okay. For Mecole Hardman. Oh, nah, probably not. That? Probably not.
Okay.
But Hardman is a guy who we don't – okay, 4 to 6 weeks isn't a super long time. All those other guys you mentioned, they're high upside plays, but we don't see wide receivers come out of nowhere. Tyler Boyd was like the one notable exception last year, but come out of nowhere and be top 12, top 24 guys. Guys like John Brown, I don't think they have massive upside. I never really did. That's why I was always really wide receiver heavy earlier in drafts. Hardman's a guy that I think has really explosive upside, and that's worth chasing, that you might actually put in your lineup.
John Brown just put up 100 yards and a touchdown in week one and had like a 27% target share.
Yeah, and Josh Allen, in a huge passing game script, threw for 254 yards on 37 attempts. He still ran 10 times. Like, that's not going to be a high-volume pass offense. Yeah, he had a great game, and he's going to have great games, but I think he's going to be pretty boom or bust still.
Yeah, sell John Brown to Heath. Get in a league with Heath.
Yeah, John Brown's – he's very high on John
always,
Brown. I know that.
Always, yeah. At Oakland for Hardman, then Baltimore, then at Detroit, then the Colts, then Houston. So not a terrible schedule. Some good, some bad matchups there while Tyreek Hill was out. Who is your favorite buy low candidate, Heath? I'll get one favorite buy low, one favorite sell high from both of you. Heath, who's your favorite buy low?
It's really tough to know like which performances people cared about from the elite players, but I would be trying to see if someone was a little bit discouraged by Nick Chubb and the fact that he had a touchdown stolen by Dontrell Hilliard, because he really dominated running back touches in this game, and I fully expect he's going to be the top 7 or 8 running back that we all thought he was going to be.
Okay, Nick Chubb. And Ben, how about you? Who's your favorite buy low?
Definitely like the Chubb call. I moved him up based on that week one performance, even though he wasn't very productive. My guy will be Miles Sanders. He got rush attempts on the first and third carries of the game for the Eagles. So he was in and involved right away. In the past, in these types of game scripts, because the Eagles were behind 17-0 early and 20-7 at halftime, you would see Darren Sproles play a lot of snaps and run a lot of routes. Sproles was involved a little bit, but it's notable that in that type of script, Sanders played the most running back snaps by a lot and ran the most routes, ran 16 routes. Sproles ran, I believe, 9 and Jordan Howard 8 or vice versa, but they combined for 17 and Sanders ran 16. He played about half the snaps in this game. He also got their two closest running back rush attempts, two carries from the 3-yard line, and had a 21-yard rushing TD called back. His final line, 12 touches, 27 yards, does not show how good of a sign this first game was. They were playing him early. They were playing him often. Jordan Howard only had 3 touches until late in the game when the Eagles had regained the lead and had a 29-20 lead and put together like a 15-play drive. And Howard got 5 more touches on that drive to finish with 8 touches. And Howard might be the salt-away running back guy based on that, but I was really surprised to see Sanders already getting inside the 5-yard line touches. That's where I would have thought that Howard would have got touches, kind of a veteran deference thing to start the season. Sanders already getting those touches, already running the most routes on the team, even though he wasn't targeted as much as Sproles or Howard, but the routes are a really good indication that he'll be involved in the pass game and already playing the most snaps. Absolute favorite buy low this week.
Nick Chubb for Heath, Miles Sanders for Ben, and I'll continue that theme. I know Ben's going to talk about how this is, it takes a little while for rookies to get into the swing of things. It just does, especially running backs and David Montgomery. I mean, we talked about it on Friday after the Thursday night opener. I think David Montgomery is a good buy low. I don't know if you're going to get immediate dividends, so hopefully you don't have to start him if you trade for him. But I think eventually the time is going to come for David Montgomery. He's the most complete back in that backfield. And I look forward to seeing what they do going forward. I think they'll be playing with the lead more, obviously. I still think they're going to win the division. So Miles Sanders, David Montgomery, Nick Chubb, 3 running backs you can buy low on. I'm going to ask you guys for your favorite sell high candidate after this quick break on Fantasy Football Today.
The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
So you got some buy lows before the break. Let's come back with some sell highs here. I'll go to Ben first. Ben, who's your favorite sell high candidate after 1 week?
It's Mark Ingram. I played him some in DFS, and I wasn't on him at all this offseason, but he was a great play in week one. I totally, I'm not trying to say that what he did was fluky. It was a great setup. It was the perfect script for him. But he got 5 rush attempts in the green zone. Last year's team league high was the Saints. Most green zone rush attempts, that's inside the 10-yard line, so high value scoring opportunities. The Saints led the league last year, averaged 3.4 per game. Ingram got 5 against the Dolphins. Gus Edwards got 4. The Ravens had 9 in week one opportunities. And again, the league leader last year, 3.4. We're probably going to see them more, even if they are very, very efficient offense all year long, more in the 3 to 4 per week range. The fact that he split those opportunities with Gus Edwards is the more notable thing for me. Mm-hmm. Both drives where he scored rushing touchdowns, Gus Edwards got a rush attempt in the 10-yard zone, the green zone, before Ingram scored. And just as easily, Gus Edwards could have got into the end zone before Ingram came on and got those TDs. So, very interesting note there that when those opportunities come down, when the Ravens offense isn't as good, he might not have as many scoring opportunities. And then more particularly, we saw again from Lamar Jackson, the same thing as last year. He doesn't throw to the running backs. He's going to scramble if he needs to, or he's going to throw the ball down the field. No running backs got targets except for, I believe, their fullback. So Ingram, great game in week one, but a great time to also see what you can get for him, because going forward, probably not going to be able to score twice in every game and probably not going to get enough receiving work to be super valuable.
All right. Can I just wait? Can I wait until after he plays Arizona and the Chiefs and then sell him?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that works too.
Cause he might score 2 times this week and next week.
I honestly had not looked at his next 2 matchups. I don't have him anywhere. I didn't draft him anywhere, but that's fair. Maybe we should save this for week 3.
But it's a good point. I mean, all right. So Mark Ingram for Ben. How about you, Heath? Who's your favorite sell high?
We're just only talking about running backs today, because I'm going to talk about the guy one spot ahead of Mark Ingram in the week one standings. Marlon Mack had 22 yards on 8 carries in the first half of this game, picked up over 50% of his rush production in terms of yards, and his only touchdown on 2 third quarter rush attempts. Once again, 0 targets, no involvement in the pass game. I'm just scared. Just as scared as I was before this game, and I'm hopeful that this performance made somebody think, oh, he's going to be fine. He could still be a top 15 running back, and I'm selling him to them.
Yeah, I had the Colts. I don't know what to make of them. Maybe Jacoby Brissett's going to have a good year, and if he does, then Marlon Mack and T.Y. Hilton, look, I guess you could sell high. They're both coming off great games, but maybe they can be a lot better than I thought they were going to be, so I'm a little bit hesitant to sell. You know, it's possible that they have a good quarterback. I don't think he's going to be a great quarterback, but if he's a good quarterback with that offensive line, I think Mack and Hilton are going to be close to must start guys. I don't think they're going to be like tremendous players, but I think they're going to be close to must start.
Sure. Heath.
Yeah. I don't know. All right.
Sell high and him still be close to must start and it'd be a good decision.
So what would you look for? Like, you're not going to get, you're not going to get Nick Chubb for Marlon Mack. What would you try to get for Marlon Mack? Gurley?
Oh, I'd love Gurley. That'd be huge.
Yeah, what about Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen? I mean, those are guys I would grab or try to acquire from Marlon Mack. The Vikings only threw 10 pass attempts in week one. That's crazy. It's the third fewest in a single game over the last decade, which is, we're talking about thousands of games over that span. We always expected these guys to be high target share guys in a low volume passing offense, and nothing we learned in week one really changes that. The Seahawks last year threw the fewest pass attempts in the last 5 seasons. They averaged, I think it was 27.6 per game in the high 20s. The Vikings at 10 pass attempts in week one was one of the biggest statistical anomalies of week one. They'll still be a low volume team. I mean, it's a big indication they want to run, but they'll probably throw 3 times as much most weeks. So Thielen and Diggs, we didn't really learn anything that changed their value other than just the Vikings didn't need to throw at all in week one.
All right, we got a lot more coming up here on the show, including Antonio Brown. I mean, we should probably mention that. I'm getting real tired of talking about Antonio Brown, but big news and fantasy implications. Just one thing I want to tell you about, a couple things I want to tell you about, actually. CBS Sports HQ, you know, we talk about it a lot. We do a nightly show now, I think Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday from 8 to 9 p.m. Last night, Heath and I were on talking about the waiver wire. So if you miss the afternoon show, watch us in the evenings, but the afternoon show is noon Eastern, noon to 1, Monday through Friday, and then on Sunday, 3 hours before kickoff, they're on talking football, talking fantasy football. If you miss that, you can watch them on demand on HQ on your OTT devices. So when you get home from work on your Roku, on your Apple TV, on your smart TV, wherever you watch HQ, you can watch a replay of the noon show, which I think is awesome. Please check that out. Go to sportsline.com if you want some gambling advice or some fantasy advice, just some sports advice. The promo code is HUDDLE to get your first month for $1. After that, it's just $9.99. It's a great price for a gambling website, sportsline.com, and the promo code is Huddle. And I know you have asked about a FanDuel contest for our listeners. I am working on that. I think there's a chance it happens this week. It's possible it would be next week, but we'll have some type of FanDuel contest. I'm pretty sure. I feel good about that. So go to FanDuel.com and use the promo code FFT when you sign up. News and notes. Antonio Brown has been accused of sexual assault. And, you know, like people are going to make fantasy decisions based on this, right? They're going to try to maybe acquire Antonio Brown dirt cheap, thinking, you know, that maybe nothing comes of it. You know, I don't really want to get into the whole situation, but there is some fantasy impact. If you want to talk about it, I don't want to put you guys in a spot where you're uncomfortable talking about this. But, you know, what would you tell fantasy owners right now about this Patriots wide receiving unit?
I'm just holding right now until we get more information. I don't know that we have enough information to make any sort of action, and I think it's better just hold.
Okay, fair enough. Obviously, you know how to evaluate these guys if Antonio Brown's not there, because that's what you did when you drafted. Anything on Joe Mixon right now, guys? Do we know anything about his status?
I've still seen almost, like, I saw a little bit of optimism that maybe it was just a sprained ankle, but nothing after that.
Okay. So I'll run through the notes here. Mike Tomlin optimistic about Juju Smith-Schuster playing this week. The Jets acquired Demaryius Thomas for a sixth-round pick. They get Cleveland on Monday night. Ben, does this matter to you with the Jets getting Demaryius Thomas?
Not even in the least.
Okay. Speaking of the Jets, they could be without C.J. Mosley, their linebacker, and Quinnen Williams, their defensive tackle. So it could be a huge week for Nick Chubb. And Odell Beckham's going to keep wearing his watch, so, you know, don't break it. Cleveland running back Dontrell Hilliard is in the concussion protocol. Bill O'Brien expects Kenny Stills' role to grow, and he's widely available. Ben, what's your interest in adding Kenny Stills, who did score a huge touchdown for the Texans in week one?
It's pretty low. His role wasn't very big. He ended up with three catches, but two of those were on design jet sweeps where he got little tip passes, and they went for a combined 0 yards, and then he caught the big touchdown late, and he finished with the three catches, 37 yards, but all of those yards were on that touchdown play. His role was very, very small. So even if it grows, I mean, we didn't see him get any targets really in the normal flow of the football game throughout the entire game, frankly, until the very last play when they were using his speed to go vertical because they needed to. He's not a priority for me right now.
All right, that's Kenny Stills. Some defensive injuries. Garion Conley, we saw the scary hit that he took and got taken off on a stretcher, but he may actually play this week for Oakland. But they are losing their safety, their rookie safety, Jonathan Abrams. He may go on IR. That's a tough blow for them as they get the Chiefs this week. Tampa Bay safety Justin Evans is on IR. Oh, Heath, has Cam Newton ranked? I'm not going to tell you. You're going to have to wait to find out. Arizona right tackle Marcus Gilbert's on IR. But meanwhile, back to the Thursday game. I skipped a couple of important ones. Peyton Barber is going to start. Great. And Greg Olsen plans to play, but it's a short week, which he said is not ideal. So right now he plans to play through a back issue. Detroit right tackle Juwan James has a knee injury. Houston signed Nick Martin to a three-year, $33 million deal. Great performance by that Texans offensive line. Somebody gets a contract extension out of that. Okay. Washington defensive tackle Jonathan Allen has a sprained MCL. Minnesota cornerback Mackenzie Alexander is going to miss some time with an elbow injury as they get ready for the Packers. And Denver wide receiver Tim Patrick broke his hand. Heath, we take a quick look at the most added list. The top five most added players are John Ross, 49%. Marquise Brown now up to 71%. And the most added list, that you know, it ranks people based on the change in ownership. So Ross went up the most. Brown went up the second most to 71% owned. Malcolm Brown is 54% owned. He's third. Giovanni Bernard still just 38% owned. He's fourth. And Terry McLaurin, 21% owned. He's fifth. I threw it to Heath, but actually I want to throw it to Ben because I know Ben had stuff to say about John Ross. So go ahead, Ben. Sorry, Heath.
Yeah, no, I've been anyone who's followed my stuff in previous years before I joined you guys here at CBS knows that I was pretty high on John Ross, which worked out swimmingly last year. just absolutely crushed for all my leagues. But interestingly, his year last year, a lot of people have commented on how bad he was, how bad his efficiency was. He led the NFL in uncatchable target rate. So he 50%, a full 50% of the targets that went down as going towards John Ross last year were uncatchable. That's a big reason I wasn't talking about him a ton this offseason, because I just thought the connection with Andy Dalton wasn't great. But we saw a big change in week one under a new head coach. And we also know that John Ross in his rookie season was in the doghouse with Marvin Lewis. There always seemed to be some distrust there. He seemed openly disinterested. Believe me, I watched him very closely last year, disinterested at times last year. But now here in year three, I think this guy still has plenty of potential, was a good prospect, not just a speed guy, had a lot of production at Washington, had 20 touchdowns in his final season, scored in every way throughout his college career, ran back four kicks, scored multiple rushing touchdowns and tons of receiving scores. But now he's playing in a Zach Taylor offense. He comes from the Sean McVay coaching tree. And the big note for him and the way that they ran this offense yesterday was that they were heavy 11 personnel, over 80% snaps and an over 80% routes per drop back for each of three wide receivers for the Bengals on Sunday, Tyler Boyd, John Ross, and Damian Willis. And it explains why the team was saying Damian Willis was going to play in AJ Green's role. That's a separate role from John Ross's role. So we know AJ Green's coming back. But if John Ross really builds on this first game and has a good start to the season, it's a very, very good chance he would be essentially the Brandon Cooks role in this 11 personnel heavy scheme, which means three wide receivers starting and playing a lot of snaps. You'd have AJ Green as kind of the Robert Woods intermediate target role and deep target role. And then you'd have Tyler Boyd as kind of the Cooper Kupp clone as the slot guy and move guy. So big news on John Ross long term that he wouldn't necessarily lose his playing time when AJ Green comes back.
Yeah, he'd probably lose some production, but not playing time. That's a good start.
Sure.
I don't disagree with anything Ben said, but since you didn't come to me after you said you were going to come to me and I had something so ready to say, like, I don't understand why John Ross and Marquise Brown are now more owned than Giovanni Bernard.
Well, because like, first of all, Giovanni Bernard did not have a touch in the game until Joe Mixon got hurt. So if Mixon is in, I don't think you're getting anything from Giovanni Bernard, which was the case last year. If Mixon is out, you have a must-start player.
But no one knows if Mixon is in or out.
Right, but if you don't need a running back
this week...
None of
these other guys are must-start players
If you don't need a running back this week, why are you going to your waiver wire to get Giovanni Bernard when... Like, it looks like, to me, it looks like he's a one-week guy, maybe a two-week guy, but he's not a long-term solution. And he has no role. He has no role when Mixon is healthy.
Because you feel confident that Joe Mixon will stay healthy after this, the third injury in his 2 years and one game in the league.
So let's just pick up all the backups.
Let's pick up the ones that have demonstrated that they are top 12 running backs when they have a chance to play. We're just added Malcolm Brown.
But he has no role. But Malcolm Brown
scored
got 10
two
carries.
Touchdowns. No one's starting Malcolm Brown this week. His role is irrelevant.
But the only reason
you're adding Malcolm Brown is in case something happens to Todd Gurley. Todd Gurley is not currently injured right now.
That's fine. Okay. 38% owned. He should probably be more owned than that. But I was discouraged by the fact I looked at the game log and he had zero touches before Mixon's injury. He had zero touches in the first half, and I'm pretty sure it was before the injury. You know, definitely in the first half, and I don't know exactly when Mixon got hurt, but I think it was just like his last carry, didn't play the rest of the game, and then Gio took over.
But I mean, to Heath's point, Mixon is hurt. Like, Giovanni Bernard might start in week two.
Yeah.
He should definitely be owned.
All right, we got to take another break here, and we're going to preview the game when we come back. Oh, the regulators are coming on as well, so get excited for that. We'll be right back on Fantasy Football Today.
What's up, everyone? I want to tell you about a car that you are going to love. Check it out. The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, I love that, available dual wireless charging pads ensure that you can take on any adventure. So let's say you're ready to take the family on a camping trip or something like that. The Santa Fe is perfect for you. You've got all-wheel drive. You can load everyone up in the third row. It's time to start being adventurous, and you need the right car, and that's the Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Still a lot more trade talk and players we weren't willing to drop and the regulators and your emails and grade the trade. But right now, let's do Tampa Bay at Carolina. All right, so I was going to say Mike Evans is a great buy low, and I think everybody knows that Mike Evans is great, but there's so much Jameis Winston panic right now that maybe people are panicking on Mike Evans, and I think everybody would be on board with that. But I do want to point out he had two bad games against the Panthers last year, and Garrett Bradbury, their cornerback, the Panthers cornerback, has done a pretty good job on Mike Evans. All that means is that you're starting him, but if he has a bad game, I wouldn't freak out about it. So as we look at this game, let's start with the Buccaneers, and let's start with their receiving core. As you can see them on the screen here on our video show, which you should be watching on YouTube, youtube.com/fantasyfootballtoday. Heath, your take on Godwin, Evans, and Howard.
I'm just mostly optimistic and wanting to buy low on both Evans and Howard for the course of the season. Mostly very concerned about this week. The epiphany that I kind of had during that game was we really didn't bake in any sort of time for Jameis Winston and this offense to adjust to a new system. We talk about quarterbacks with new systems a lot, and we just assumed they were going to be awesome from week one. They were clearly not awesome during week one against what I still think is not a very good defense in San Francisco. And so I'm concerned in week two because I don't know that 3 days is enough to fix anything. Are you still starting Mike Evans? Yeah, probably. You're probably still starting all these guys, but I'm not very excited about it.
Are you going to keep Greg Olsen, Mark Andrews, Darren Waller ahead of OJ Howard?
You know, there will be rankings adjustments this afternoon. I am not certain that I'm going to be moving Howard, and I don't think I really, like, I think the difference is more that I have Olsen ranked higher than everyone else. Looks like Jamie's got Howard at 11-2, Dave's got him at 9. I love OJ Howard's talent. I'm not questioning that at all, but we've basically gone through 2 years of why doesn't he get more than 3 to 5 targets per game? We were all ready for that to change because Bruce Arians has such a great track record with tight ends. And then week one, he gets 5 targets and Cameron Brate has 2 touchdowns called back. I'm not certain much has changed with his usage that we tried to will it into happening. I'm not sure that it has yet.
Yeah, he played a big snap rate, but ran a route on only 55% of Jameis's dropbacks, to your point, and Cameron Brate was at 44%. So that doesn't look like much change with his usage.
Okay, both these teams, by the way, I think they stink against tight ends. Carolina was awful last year against tight ends. Howard had a 2-touchdown game against them. Tampa Bay gave up they gave up 2 touchdowns that were called back to George Kittle, for what that's worth. But their defense still, you know, I don't think we're buying it there. Todd Bowles is maybe going to help improve, but they still have a ways to go. So if you need to stream a tight end, Olsen's not the worst option, as Heath will tell you, because he has him in the top 10 right now. That may
And he had 9 targets week one.
He did. The back injury sucks, and the fact that he openly talked about how the short week is not good for his back injury, that's disappointing. But I have Olsen in a couple of leagues, and I'm probably going to stick with him. Obviously, Hockenson, Waller, if I had picked them up, that would be one thing, but I'm going to start. Are you going to start Olsen or Jimmy Graham, who also appears has a good matchup? I don't know that the Vikings are great against tight ends, but Olsen or Graham?
Olsen.
Okay. All right. Let's talk about the quarterbacks.
Very close for me. Yeah.
We'll go to the quarterbacks here. So starting with Cam, who I'm pretty sure most people are going to start, but Dave has him 12th. Jamie has him, I think, 5th, and Heath has him 1st. He's your number one quarterback.
He is my number one quarterback, which really, for me, isn't that big of a deal because he was like 4th coming into the year. I think he was 3rd last week. He's playing the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at home. I expect a big bounce back week. He's right. Like, the difference between Cam, Deshaun Watson, Lamar Jackson, and Patrick Mahomes is like 1 fantasy point. So I wouldn't argue with ranking any of those guys ahead of Cam. But yeah, I expect a huge week.
Ben, do you have any faith in Jameis Winston this week?
No, I mean, I'm right with where Heath is at in terms of just like you kind of have to start these guys, but I don't like it. I have him in a couple leagues where he's my only quarterback, and there's guys that I don't want to cut on my bench, but I'm trying to decide whether to just outright cut him for a guy with a good quarterback matchup like a Derek Carr or Andy Dalton who have decent matchups this week. I'm probably just going to play Jameis and not do that because I don't want to carry two quarterbacks to the point that we talked about at the top of the show. But that's how concerned I am about him right now.
If you were some waiver wire guys, you'd start over Winston.
That's the thing that I mostly agree with Ben. There really aren't very many. The only guy, I've got a group of quarterbacks ranked right in that 15 through 18 range. Only one of them actually projected for more points, and it's Andy Dalton against the 49ers. And they're like almost tied. Derek Carr's right there against the Chiefs. I think you could consider Josh Allen, but for the most part, I'm concerned. I don't have confidence in Jameis. I'm probably still starting him. I will say, I think Mitchell Trubisky was dropped in a lot of leagues, and I would start Trubisky over Winston.
Okay. What about Aaron Rodgers against the Vikings or Winston?
I've got Rodgers higher. I've got Rodgers a little bit higher than I did last week. It's not a good matchup at all, but at least he's at home. So I feel a little bit more confident in Rodgers.
All right, we'll start McCaffrey, obviously. What about the Tampa Bay running backs? Nobody's going to start Peyton Barber, but should we take a shot on Ronald Jones, Ben?
You got to be in kind of a dire situation. Look, I was obviously really high on Ronald Jones last offseason. This offseason, he's my highest owned running back in my most leagues. And I was very encouraged by what we saw in week one. But Dare Ogunbowale ran the team's highest number of routes. He was in on the first third down. He was in on most third downs throughout the game. Jones looked really good on the ground, and he also caught a pass and turned it into an 8-yard gain. I'd love to see his receiving work expand, but he's a back that's trying to earn a larger share of the early down work and isn't even necessarily running a lot of routes. I think he ran a single-digit number of routes. I think it might have been 4. Barber ran 12, and Ogunbowale ran something like 18 or 19 and was their primary third-down back. So Jones looked very explosive, and there's a chance that if he continues to be very good, he ends up being essentially the three-down back. He's easily the most talented back of this trio, but he's a hard guy to start right away in week two when the team's saying, and particularly the head coach is saying, that they're still going to keep the same rotation and then only just go with him if he has the hot hand.
Okay. Would you start Justin Jackson or Ronald Jones?
Jackson.
Jackson, yeah.
Carlos Hyde, Duke Johnson, Ronald Jones. They're facing Jacksonville.
Duke. Then probably Ronald Jones, then Carlos Hyde.
Yeah,
for me.
How about Aaron Jones against the Vikings or Ronald Jones?
Aaron Jones.
Yeah, you got to rank him higher, but I don't want to play Aaron Jones this week.
How about James White or Ronald Jones?
In non-PPR?
Give me all three formats.
It's not close in any of them, James White.
Yeah, it's White.
They're
playing the Dolphins. They're going to have
I'm concerned they're gonna be up by 30 at halftime, you know? Like, what do they need James White for?
Sure, that might happen, but he should still catch some passes while they get up by 30. Yeah. It's a lot of points we're talking about.
He might score one of the touchdowns.
All right, Curtis Samuel, DJ Moore, start or sit? Let's finish up here.
Against Tampa Bay, I think you can start both of them. The one issue concern I had with Cam Newton was his average depth of target was very low, or average depth of throw. And that's part of the reason we didn't see a lot from Curtis Samuel. I'd hope to see them take some shots here, but I have some faith in him. It's a great matchup. DJ Moore's a must-start for me. Unless you're really deep.
DJ Moore is definitely a must-start. I'm not. I wrote about it on Monday, and I know people still disagree. I'm not starting Curtis Samuel until I see something on an actual football game field during an actual football game that looks like it's different than it was last year. We saw almost 80% of their targets went to Olsen, McCaffrey, and Moore in week one. It won't be that high every week, but it looks like a clear big three, and there's not room for a fourth starting option in this passing offense, I don't believe.
Would you start DJ Moore or Chris Thompson?
Moore.
Moore.
6 of Thompson's 10 targets came on their final drive in garbage time.
Yeah, but they're going to be trailing for more of the game than they were against Philadelphia. So he's going to have more opportunities. Would you start DJ Moore or Devin Singletary?
Moore. Yeah, Moore. Singletary's super interesting.
Yes,
I actually have Moore ranked the highest of any of the receivers in this game.
Whoa.
Whoa, I love that.
Wow.
That's a good take.
Okay, hope it's not a Curtis Samuel week. And the Panthers DST, they're available and they're not bad. It's not a good week for streaming DSTs, so they are not bad. If you were rewriting a 2019 bus column, who would you lead with? Okay, so let's just go through some of the answers I got here. Jameis Winston was probably the one I got the most. I come back to this. Week 8 last season, Jameis Winston threw 4 interceptions at the Bengals. He got benched for Fitzpatrick. He sat the next 2 games, and then he relieved Fitzpatrick at the Giants three games later. In his next 3 starts, he scored 22 to 26 fantasy points. If you drafted Jameis Winston thinking he was never going to have a bad game and never going to throw interceptions, what were you doing? I mean, I just don't jump off the cliff yet with Jameis. So I don't know. I think people have reacted a little bit too harshly. But Heath, you also make a good point that it could take a little while for him to get going in this offense.
Yeah, I just still expect that we're going to have a 4 to 6 week stretch at some point, or maybe longer, where Jameis Winston's a top 5 quarterback.
All right, so here's
agreed.
What we're
going to
do.
Yeah, I mean, he still had plenty of air yards, and he chucked the ball around. Yeah, he was bad as a player, but we've seen that at times, and he's still had the volume. So those completions will be there in some games.
Here's what we'll do. We'll go through this list of busts quickly, and you'll tell me what you think. Are they actually busts? Are they buy lows?
Bustometer?
Yeah. Okay, the bustometer.
Lightning round.
0 to 10 on the bustometer. 10 is they are definitely going to be a bust this year. 0 is buy low on them immediately. Kerryon Johnson.
3. 7.
Woohoo! Concerned, huh?
Yeah, I mean, they threw 45 times. They're not going to play that up-tempo most games. He only had like 60 scoreless yards in a game where they played 5 quarters and ran like 80 in the high 80s in plays, play volume. So, yeah, very concerned. Only 2 targets out of 45 and 16 low-value rushes. I always talk about the high-value touches. His workload was not great for an up-tempo game. This offense isn't going to run this many snaps in most weeks, so to see him not produce here was not good.
Yeah, bad start for Kerryon. I'm going to be a little more optimistic. I'll be closer to Heath's 3. Whereas on this guy, I'm a little bit pessimistic. I don't think he's going to be a bust, but Stephon Diggs, who Ben talked about earlier as a buy low, I just think Thielen's better. I think if one of those guys suffers from a low pass offense, it's going to be Diggs. I talked about that in the preseason. So, you know, I think he's kind of a bust, but 0 to 10, guys, Heath on Stephon Diggs.
4.5. I agree entirely with what Ben said about them not throwing 10 passes per game. That's not what they want. But you, like Mike Zimmer, was so happy with the outcome of that game and how little they had to put the ball in the air and how much they got to run and play super slow. That just really is what he enjoys about football. And so I do think there might be several games where they throw 25 passes. And I don't know that both Thielen and Diggs can be good with 25 passes a game.
4.5. How about you, Ben? 0 to 10 for Diggs.
2. Yeah, I totally agree with what Heath just said, but I just think if they throw 25 passes, Thielen and Diggs will get 20 of them. I mean, that's essentially what we thought coming into the season.
Mitchell Trubisky is next on the bustometer. 68% owned now.
He was drafted in like the 12th or 14th round or
How
something.
Are
How
you
can you be
starting
a bust?
Him over Jameis Winston? He is at Denver this week. They are
he was
be
better than Jameis
off.
Winston last year. And
no,
Derek
really
Carr
wasn't.
Just had a good game at Denver.
Dude, Trubisky had a good 6-game stretch. In his last 7 games, he ran for 23 yards once. More than 23 yards once.
He's going to have some bad games. He's going to have some good games. Just like Jameis.
He's going to have a bad game this week.
Was Trubisky better in end-of-season numbers or in points per game?
I don't know. He was 12th in points per game. I don't know what Jameis was in
They're
points
about
per
the
game.
Same.
But Jameis played like 4 games that he only played half the game, so are we only counting those as halves?
No, I looked at Jameis' starts, and I think he was about 12th as well in points per game. So they were similar. All right, let's move on. How about Damian Williams, 0 to 10 on the bustometer?
3. He got the receiving work.
Yeah, 3.5. He's not going to be worth a second or third round pick if it's just the receiving work and 40% of the rush attempts. And LeSean McCoy looked better as a runner in week 1.
And Corey Davis, 0 to 10 on the bustometer.
8?
5.5. I'm not ready to drop him yet.
Okay. Look.
I mean, A.J. Brown looked like the number one receiver and was a really high credential prospect. For him to step right in week 1 and do what he did and Corey Davis to not catch a pass, I'm going 8.
Let's take our last break of the show. We got regulators, buy low and sell high when we come back. We'll be right back.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Let's do some regulating. Here we go. Fantasy football at CBSi.com. Put fantasy regulators in the subject line. I apologize. I don't have a name for this one. Our league is set up with a $100 fab budget in the settings. But an email from the commissioner communicated that the budget was $1,000. It's a keeper. It's a keeper league. And last year was also,
highlight of the show.
Yeah, last year was also $1,000. So it's set up to be $100, but the email said $1,000, and the last year was $1,000. Without realizing the budget was actually $100, I made a claim on a player for $100 and another claim for $50. I had the high bid on both players, but the first bid cleared my entire fab, and the $50 claim went to a team that bid $10. There were multiple other bids cleared on other players from a mixed bag of people on what the rules were. Therefore, the resolution is complicated. I think all players should go back on waivers for rebid, and the league thinks we should do nothing. I missed out on a great player critical to my team, and I have no fab for the rest of the year. The league thinks it's unfair no matter what action. I get that the value for each player is different in time now, and manager valuations are exposed unfairly, but I think this is less unfair than having no budget left and losing out on a player that would be owned if settings were correct. I also realize I have a responsibility to analyze the league settings. What is the most fair resolution? I think this is hilarious that this guy wiped out his entire fab on one player because the email said it was $1,000 instead of $100. And I would give every player, I would take every player back and I would reset fab and I would do it again. That's what I would do. Ben, what would you do here?
I think I would do the same. I've been in this situation before in leagues, and really? I understand the point. Yeah, I understand that, like, where there was a major technical problem or what have you, not the mistake on what the fab amount was, but I think fab ran early or something, and half the people didn't get their claims in. But I understand the point where it's like now everybody knows what everybody wants to bid, but the only fair way to do it is you have to redo it. You have to pull everyone back and redo it. I mean, we did like a vote on it in that league, and it sucks, but now you just have more information and you can, you know, use that how you want. Either you bid higher, you bid lower, whatever. But if it was 1,000 last year and there was an email that it was 1,000 and then it was just 100, yeah, and it goes through, you got to redo it.
There needs to be an investigation into the commissioner on this subject, yeah, because if it was set up as 1,000, it had to be changed from 1,000 to 100 at some point. The guy who would have done that is also the guy that sent the email saying it was 1,000. And now they don't want to change it to make it right. Yeah, I think I would probably put the commissioner on probation. And one more incident like this, and he would be fired.
Okay, there you go. See, that's we take.
That was some pretty good Sherlock Holmesing right there, laying out the timeline. I liked it.
Okay, let's do. We're gonna finish out the video portion of the show with some more buy low and sell high, guys. We have about 6 minutes left here, so we'll do it as quickly as we can. Heath will hop off, and Ben and I will hang around to answer some of your emails and do a little bit more regulating. All right, so Heath, give me some more buy low candidates. We've already given Nick Chubb, Miles Sanders, and David Montgomery. Heath had Chubb, Ben took Sanders, and I said David Montgomery. Give me some more guys. Go ahead, Heath.
Yeah, I would buy low. Like, it's hard to make trades for quarterbacks, but Cam Newton is the type of guy who I think still has top three quarterback potential and just put up one of the worst performances any quarterback will put up this season. So he is someone I would definitely try to target in a league maybe that isn't quite as experienced. I think that there's a chance Todd Gurley could be a good buy low candidate. The touches weren't really that much different than what I expected. He had 15 touches in the game. I had him projected for 17 per game. And I don't think he'll get all the touchdowns like you were hoping for, Adam. But I also don't believe that the plan is just when we get into the red zone, Malcolm Brown's going to score all the touchdowns. And Todd Gurley is just going to be perfectly fine with that. I anticipate he will score plenty of touchdowns. And so if somebody thinks he's not a top 12 running back now, I'd be trying to buy low on Gurley.
he's getting two this week. They will make up for it. Ben, who else are we buying low on?
I'll throw Christian Kirk out there. The Arizona offense was kind of stuck in the mud for three quarters, but really picked up. They played really fast. They wound up with a ton of air yards and a ton of volume. We would need to see more earlier in the game going forward, but it's, I think we can cut them a little bit of slack given it was a first-time head coach and a rookie quarterback that it took them a little while. At least they came alive late. Christian Kirk had a ton of volume, a lot of targets, a lot of air yards, didn't have a lot of production. Another interesting note on this offense, Keyshawn Johnson and Demarius Byrd are guys that I would be either on the watch list or be willing to add, maybe on the watch list after their matchup with the Ravens in week two. The Cardinals ran a ton of four wide receiver sets, more than I've seen at the NFL level. All four of their top receivers, those three and Larry Fitzgerald, ran around on at least 83% of Kyler Murray's dropbacks. They hardly use their tight ends. So those, like, they could feasibly have four fantasy viable receivers because they're running them all out in routes every time, and they have, like, a lot of volume.
That's how you get zero fantasy viable wide receivers. Like, that scares me. Not to mention the fact they were garbage for three quarters against a really bad team that was a terrible pass defense last year on a per attempt basis anyway.
Not when you have 500 air yards in the offense, though. That's the reason. Like, they ran so many plays and threw.
I am nervous buying into the Cardinals offense. I still think they're more likely to be bad than good. They already lost their right tackle for the season, and they have a terrible offensive line. I'm scared of them.
It's a great test because I am generally on the side of the analytics that Ben is citing here, and Arizona is the darling of that community, and week one did nothing to change that. But it's going to be a great test as to whether they are, like, how do you have to be good, or can you just do all these things that we think you should do and run a lot of four wide receiver sets and throw the ball down the field and it'll all work out? It's going to be interesting to see.
All right. Any other buy lows, Ben?
I don't even think you have to be good in fantasy.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. They weren't good for most of that game. And I generally would favor the larger sample size. But I think the argument you were making is that I don't care if they're good. They're going to do this. Right. It'll work out for fantasy. And I'm not sure I buy that, but I think it's possible.
Okay. Ben, one more. Are you done?
Yeah, I don't know if Devin Singletary qualifies as a buy low, but we mentioned him a little bit earlier. He played a 70% snap share. He only rushed four times, so that might be the reason you can buy low on him. But Frank Gore, who ran 11 times, Singletary started. He didn't come in, Gore didn't come in until the last snap, I believe, of the first quarter, the first snap of the second quarter. He also was used, three of his 11 rush attempts were trying to run the clock out, and he wasn't able to gain a first down. First, second, third down, got stuffed. They punted. He was also used at their own goal line from the 2 yard line and got a 2 yard loss and gave up a safety. So they were giving him these, like, veteran, like, early down, we need a safe running back that's not going to fumble type touches. And he still wasn't very effective. Singletary only got the four carries, but played so many snaps. TJ Yeldon did not play. Singletary ran a route on 82% of Josh Allen's dropbacks. I mean, just an awesome usage trend for him in week one. So maybe if you can buy low on those four rush attempts, but he was good.
Heath, who are we selling high on?
This is the toughest thing. Like, after week one, the way I've seen on the waiver wire, some of the people react to some of the younger wide receivers and the people that are being dropped, the Justice Hills, the Justin Jacksons. I think that there's a decent chance you could sell high on both John Ross and Marquise Brown. I'm a little bit more nervous about Brown than I am Ross, even though Ross is, like, from a numbers perspective, Ross's looks more believable because Marquise Brown didn't play very much, but it was his very first game and he's a first round pick. I expect his snap count to go up. I actually expect Ross's targets to go down once AJ Green comes back.
Okay. All right. I was thinking Derrick Henry. I just don't want to change my mind about a guy that I thought was going to be basically the biggest bust in fantasy. He had a great game. The Titans had a very good game. I don't really buy the Titans, and I don't really buy Derrick Henry, especially a 75-yard touchdown catch. So I'm going to try to sell high on Derrick Henry.
He only got three high-value touches. We talked about him as a big trap back, and he scored on two of those three. That's where both of his touchdowns came from. I agree with you. Very, okay. Very low high-value touch rate.
Okay, cool. Hey, Heath, thanks for hopping on today.
It was great. It was great, guys.
That's it for the video portion. If you want to see our video portion, you can see it on CBS All Access, or you can watch on youtube.com/fantasyfootballtoday. Stick around. Ben and I are answering your questions when we come back. And we're back. How about that? Okay. Bye, Heath. All right, so let's grade some trades. Ready? C is average. F is terrible. A plus is great. C is an average trade. Nobody wins, nobody loses. This is from Sam. Give D.D. Westbrook, get Carlos Hyde, non-PPR.
C and non-PPR.
Yeah, all right. All right, I can dig that. From Steven,
maybe a C plus for the D.D. set.
So this is a C minus then for Sam, since he gave up D.D.
Yes, it's a C minus for Sam. I'm sorry, Sam. Yeah.
It's okay. You'll learn. From Steven, give up Austin Eckler, get Aaron Rodgers, Tyrell Williams, and LeSean McCoy.
Yeah, that's like a minus at least. I mean, Eckler's going to be really good, but Melvin Gordon's going to come back at some point. Latest report was 4 to 6 weeks. There's a timeline on that. You're getting potentially the Chiefs starting running back, a guy who had a ton of receiving volume in week one in Tyrell Williams and Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, that's a good trade. From Derek, grade the trade. Give up Josh Jacobs and Curtis Samuel. Jacobs and Samuel. Get James Conner and Marquez Valdez-Scantling, PPR.
I love how he gave us adjusted.
He gave his own grade. I've never seen that before.
Well, I think he gets an F just for that.
He gave us a B plus. He gave himself a B plus, which is, I think, pretty good. It's pretty accurate, right?
It's a pretty good. I mean, yeah. He's good at grading his own trades. That's probably a B plus.
All right, he gave up Jacobs and Samuel. He got Connor and MVS. And if anybody's panicking about the Steelers, take advantage of it. I mean, I don't know about Roethlisberger, but Connor and Juju, take advantage of that. And finally, from Mark, grade the trade, non-PPR, give up Eckler, get David Montgomery.
That's like a C for me. Like, I think Montgomery might have a lot of value later, but you definitely want Eckler in the short term. We know that Eckler has the time limit on his production. I think I'd have Montgomery a little bit higher. So you gave up Eckler for Montgomery. I'll give you a C plus. You made a little bit of a win there, but you better have other running backs that can produce in the short term.
Right. And you know, it is non PPR. So that helps, but that was an interesting trade. Okay. Let's regulate. This one is from Blake. Dear Kurt, Dave, and Christ. That sounds Nirvana-y.
Yeah.
You're from near like out west. Is that Nirvana?
I think so. Okay. I'm not certain.
You're required to know everything about West Coast bands. Writing to you from a city due east of Lubbock, seeking advice for alleged collusion activity in my half point 10 team league. I'm the commissioner. Upset with his week's team. Okay, this was a very poorly written email. I already edited and I already screwed up. Upset with his weak team's overall week one performance. The owner of Travis Kelce accepted a trade that sent Kelce and Mayfield to the team that did the best in week one and happens to be managed by his sister for Devin Singletary and Josh Gordon. So he gave up Kelce and Mayfield and got Singletary and Josh Gordon. He gave that to his sister. He gave Kelce and Mayfield to his sister. Another manager cried collusion and posted on the league chat to veto that garbage trade. Now, I know for a fact the trade is not collusion, that the manager trading away Kelce is just that dumb. He picked 11th overall. He picked him 11th overall, which I don't care what y'all say, is stupid. However, the manager receiving Kelce and Mayfield now has cried that the posting on the league chat is collusion in that the disgruntled manager is attempting to influence a league decision of whether or not to veto. Is the encouragement to veto a trade collusion? For the record, I did veto the trade before the post because it is absurd. And I just want to, like, this is one of the worst regulators' emails. This guy is wrong. Blake, you are wrong in just about everything you're saying. Like, this trade is not that bad. He's giving up the best player, but he might be getting a starting running back and Josh Gordon. And I think this was made before the Antonio Brown, crime news potential. Crying to the league about vetoing this trade is ridiculous. Drafting Kelce 11th overall is fine.
Fine.
This is a terrible regulator's email. This trade should absolutely go through, and we should kick everybody out of the league except for these two owners.
I love it. And just to, I mean, Oh, God. You know what? Let's just move on. Like, I think from the fact that you're saying you know that it wasn't collusion, but the owner is just dumb, or you obviously think that it's dumb, but yet you voted to veto the trade. You don't veto trades because they're dumb or you think they're dumb.
Right,
you
exactly.
veto them if you think it's collusion.
Everything so about this is bad. Everything.
You should not be voting for that. And then this whole conversation about something in the league chat being collusion to try to influence a league decision is just, that's what the league chat's for people to gripe about this stuff.
Terrible email. All right, this is from Zacharin. Zach and Akron. Where are you, Zacharin? Why haven't you called the show, by the way, the radio show? Dear Scott, Ramona, Wallace, and Knives. That is Scott Pilgrim. Scott, that is a fun movie. I never thought I would need the regulators. My league is always fair and ethical, but I need you here. I offered a trade in our 12-team half people. Oh, wait. Zacharin, I am very, very sorry. I did not give you the music. Okay. I offered a trade in our 12-team half PPR league. My Austin Eckler and Zach Ertz. I give up Eckler and Ertz. I get Ezekiel Elliott and Brandon Cooks. I purposefully targeted this trade mate to sell Eckler because he loves players that blow up for huge points, and he was weak at tight end. So he'd be giving up Eckler and Ertz for Zeke and Cooks. This is a keeper league, and Eckler would be a good fourth-round keeper, assuming Melvin Gordon doesn't re-sign and Eckler is the RB1 next year. The trade was accepted, and about 30 minutes later, the commissioner texts me and says he's going to reverse the trade. The commissioner stated that the individual I traded with was asked about the trade by other league mates and then alerted the commissioner that he was, quote, unaware it was a two-for-two trade. Thought it was just Eckler for Cooks, not Eckler and Zeke, or not Eckler and Ertz for Zeke and Cooks. Long story short, the commissioner reversed the trade. I have validated in mobile that all four players are visible when reviewing the trade in one window, and you're asked to confirm prior to accepting the trade. So what do you think? Is this an okay excuse for a trade to be overturned? I thought it was a one-for-one, not a two-for-two.
I think that's kind of no. I don't think that's an okay one. It sounds like the other players in the league got to this guy and he was like, he had a little bit of buyer's remorse he decided to back off his trade. I don't believe the story.
I don't either.
I don't believe that he didn't see that there was two players on both sides of the trade. It just seems like an after the fact justification. I will say, if there's ever a time to veto, it is situations where there is a legitimate mistake, right? Or a technical glitch of some sort. Somebody didn't see something, like, yes, then you should overturn it. You shouldn't stick people with really horrible trades. But this one,
no, this is garbage.
I don't know.
I'm a very forgiving commissioner, but I'm sorry. It is not hard to see who is involved in a trade. And you know what? We are the regulators, and it has been regulated. That is Ben Gretsch. Ben, thank you.
Thank you, man. This is a lot of fun today.
Always. Wednesday shows are always fun. You know it. Starter sit tomorrow and some more trade talk. We haven't even talked about Lamar Jackson. We will do that on tomorrow's show. For Ben, for Heath, I'm Adam saying...